Abortion is mostly illegal in Texas, the only exception to save the life of the mother. So, that's put an added burden on the pro-life pregnancy centers to help women through the pregnancy, birth, and beyond. Kim Schwartz of Texas Right to Life.
There are still pregnant women who are considering abortion, and they can buy illegal abortion pills online. They can go to other states to have abortion. So we need to make sure that we are taking care of women in our community so that they're not tempted or pressured to go and have an abortion, but to actually choose life and to give them the resources they need to do that.
Charlotte Lozier Institute conducted a study of the nation's pro-life clinics and found that they made a tremendous impact after the authority was returned to the states to regulate abortion. Schwartz told AFN, since then, Texas alone has helped over 113,000 women carry their babies to term.
We don't live just in an anti-abortion state, but a truly pro-life state that encourages women and children and families and brings them together to glorify the Lord.
Texas has a network of pregnancy resource centers, adoption agencies, and maternity homes that work to help women with unplanned pregnancies.
A New York mother is suing her school district, saying it treated her daughter as a boy behind the mother's back. Jennifer Fitzsaki is being represented by Alliance Defending Freedom. In talking about this case on Washington Watch, ADF attorney Vincent Wagoner said parents have a fundamental right to make the best decisions they can about their child's upbringing, education, and health care.
The Skaneateles New York School District violated Jennifer Fitzsaki's right by hiding this crucial information about her middle school daughter from her.
AFN is seeking comment from the superintendent. Meanwhile, this federal lawsuit is filed in the Northern District of New York, Syracuse Division. Trader Joe's fans may want to check their freezers. Fox's Lillian Wu explains.
There's a public health alert for frozen pilaf sold at Trader Joe's after multiple complaints about rocks in the food, including one from a consumer who reported a dental injury from the product. The alert affects the 14-ounce plastic package of Trader Joe's chicken, lentil, and caramelized onion pilaf with saffron basmati rice, dark chicken meat, dates, and golden raisins, produced from November 1, 2023 through January 19th of this year.
In final news, the average cost of a gallon of regular gasoline today is $3.15. That's up from $3.07 on this day last month. Find more news on AFN.net.
So for God to speak is for God to engage in self-revelation. We only know God because God has condescended to speak to us.
The God Who Speaks is a 90-minute documentary that answers many of the common objections about the Bible's reliability. The film equips believers to confidently base their lives on the power of God's Word. It's available at streaming.afa.net.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here, wherever you are. If you're driving, if you're in the carpool line, if you're doing dishes, if you're at work, whatever you're doing, welcome to our conversation where we every day strive to provide hope for healthy families. That is what we want to do. I hope that you have been listening to our journey and our invitation to join in on our 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting. We've been talking a lot about this week. This week's healthy habit, in case you missed it, is listening with your face. Okay. As parents, we need to get our faces out of our phones, out of just whatever it is that is taking attention away from looking at the heart of our children. Our children need eye contact. They need at least 20 seconds of it to produce oxytocin in their brains. That's a built-in advantage and makes us feel bonded to them. So if you want to leverage that, I challenge you this week to listen with your face. When your kids are talking to you, when your spouse is talking to you, when any human being is speaking to you, are you listening with your full face? Our other habits have included prayer, memorizing scripture, plugging into a local church, listening to more Christian music, and practicing intentional gratitude. So all you have to do is just listen in every week. We'll be introducing a new habit and talking about it. And listening with your face is something that we are going to talk about today, along with a lot of other really practical things you can do to build relationships with your kid. My guest today is Kim Bonin. Now, she is a hometown girl. She is one of my neighbors. She's from Houston, lives here in Houston. She grew up in a small Texas Hill Country town, and she figured out by her junior year of high school that she wanted to be either a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. This is so interesting to me as a pediatric nurse practitioner. I want to go back to that. So she attended Texas A&M and then went to the University of Texas Medical Branch Health Science Center, and she decided on occupational therapy. Now, we're going to talk all about her journey, her life journey, getting married, being the mom to two daughters. She's married to a legislator now, but she is certified in trust-based relational intervention. So that combines her occupational therapy, sensory integration training into caring for and helping kids and their parents. She does a camp every summer that is just fantastic. If you have been listening to the show for any period of time, you know I'm a big fan of TBRI, or trust-based relational intervention. And I'm going to stop talking and we're going to let Kim tell her story. Kim, welcome to the show. We are so happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I was excited when you came to camp too.
I know. Well, I mean, who doesn't get excited? We were both like two kids, were we not? Like,
yes.
I mean, put us in camp. It's just like, I want to do all the things. I want to play all the games. I want to play with all the kids. I love it. And I feel like we should get it out of the way right here at the beginning, Kim. There's something that we share in common. You are married to a neurosurgeon.
Yes.
I am married to a rocket scientist. So I feel like there's a joke in there somewhere, right? I have to tell our audience, we were recently at a dinner together and sitting at this table with, you know, a rocket scientist and a neurosurgeon. And it's like the joke started, right? Oh, well, it's not rocket science. Well, it's not neurosurgery, which is what I face for my kids every single day. You're not mm-hmm. a rocket scientist, Mom. But tell us your story, Kim. How did you come to know the Lord?
So I actually grew up in a very strong Christian family. Interestingly, as I was thinking about it, even when my parents were not attending church when I was really young, I had a great aunt who used to come pick me up and take me to church with her. So this was like before I was 5 years old. Like, she would pick me up and take me to church, and I'd sit with her, or, you know, as I got older, I went to Sunday school or whatever. So just thinking back, I was like, you know, my parents weren't even attending then, but she took me to church with her. So I grew up in church. And when I went through the 2 years of confirmation classes in my Lutheran church that I belonged to, I took all that very seriously. I had been baptized as a baby, but I knew that confirmation was kind of my time to take over my faith walk. And I really, truly believed in that. And I took that super seriously. In fact, I still have some of the artificial flowers that were on my confirmation cake in a little vase in my closet, because it still, like, is a treasure to me, because that was a super sweet time where I really was like, yeah, this is my time to walk with the Lord, and I'm taking over this time now.
That is awesome.
So, yeah, so I did that. And then, I don't know. Then after I had my first child, I think I, again, kind of refocused in on what am I going to teach this child and what is she going to learn from me? And so I started doing Bible studies again. And interestingly, we went out to California when my oldest daughter was a year old and my husband was doing a mini fellowship out there. And I knew nobody, but I met this lady on the playground and she invited me to a Bible study at her house, and there was childcare. And I had this one-year-old child, and I knew nobody. And her husband was on faculty at the hospital where my husband was doing this fellowship. So I was like, okay. So her son and my daughter were the only two kids in the childcare, but it was at her house. So I went to her house and did this Bible study with her and these ladies. And then she continued to mentor me for like 4 years. And this was back when long distance was a charge. And there were cassette tapes. She would send me sermons sometimes, or we would go through different studies, and she would call me every week for an hour and we'd go over what she had sent me. And so she mentored me for 4 years at least, where she was really asking me, what do you really believe? And why do you believe that? Where do you find that information? And it was really a great experience for me. So Alice was really special to me. And then, you know, from there, we got involved with our church when we moved to Friendswood, and I did Bible studies, eventually leading at some of the tables. We had a small group at our house for quite a while, for a number of years, that my husband and I led. So, you know, just continuing on that path and just, yeah, just being really excited to share my faith all along the way.
Well, you know what I love about that story, Kim, is that it's the little things, the things that seem little. And I think on the other side of it, you think there's so many women and people just who are saying, does what I do really matter? You know, I'm not doing something really big. I'm not running a ministry. I'm not a rocket scientist or a neurosurgeon, right? But those things, those little faithful acts of service, just a stranger meeting you on the playground and inviting you to a Bible study, and your aunt taking you to church faithfully, those set your life on really kind of a different course. And I think that's something that we really need to pay attention to and grab onto and remember that those little faithful acts of service are often so much more impactful than what we would see or celebrate on a bigger stage as some of those bigger accomplishments.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and God took me through a crazy time during my second and third pregnancies where it was a very experiential, deep faith building and experiencing time where my trust and understanding of him, you know, grew by leaps and bounds.
That's amazing. Well, tell us what it's like. You know, your husband now is serving as a state representative, and you have had an important role in his journey. He couldn't have done that without you, I am quite confident. And what is it like today, Kim, to be a public servant in such a politically charged environment? And what role do you think all of those things that the Lord brought you through, how did that play a role in your journey in being able to face just the contentiousness and the trials and the challenges that come along with public office?
Yeah, so when I met my husband, we were in college, and I knew in my spirit that he was going to do politics someday. He even says to this day, like, he didn't know that, like, he didn't have that planned. He kind of didn't make that decision fully until he was in medical school, actually. And I think in his senior year or something, and he was in the library and started looking at state house, you know, districts and what that looked like. And, oh, he could work and be a representative for the state at the same time. So he kind of thought into that. But I knew a long time before. And so I actually prayed against it for 23 years of our marriage. Wow. Because I was just this country girl and I liked my own little bubble and I don't want to be involved in things I don't want to be involved in. Right. And yeah. So I prayed against it for 23 years. And then when the time came, God used my mouth to encourage my husband to run for public office. And it was a crazy thing, where I was reading Henry Blackaby's book, Spiritual Leaders. And in one part, in not even very far in the book, he says, God needs people in every arena. And I was like, oh, shoot, God, does this mean we have to do this political thing? And I knew then that we did. And I was like, oh, man. So then once he, you know, Greg was asking me, because he was kind of deciding, was he really going to run for office or not? And I was just like, sat down and I said all this like encouraging stuff to him, and he looked at me and he was like, well, that wasn't what I expected you to say. And I was like, wasn't what I expected me to say either. It wasn't me talking. Sorry. Those, I had not thought those things. So God totally used me to encourage him to run. And yeah, that's been, you know, like I already had an absentee husband with being a neurosurgeon, right? So then now he's a political representative on top of that. So, you know, that just kind of, people were like, how do you deal with him being gone so much to Austin? I was like, oh, you know, I kind of already experienced that as a neurosurgery wife, kind of learned to do my own thing then. So, yeah, but, you know, God has really, we had the crazy long primary season that year. So we started out like in August of 2011, then the March primary, there was like a court contested thing about where the districts were being drawn. Mm-hmm. So they just kept saying, well, the election will be a little later. It'll be a little later. So you just kind of kept having to knock on doors and do all your things, block walking and doing all your events. And it just was never ending. The election didn't happen until the end of May. And we had three people in the race. It was an open seat when Larry Taylor was going to become the senator. And so we ended up having a runoff that didn't happen until the end of July. And
wow, then that's almost a year.
Yes. Yes. And then we had, you know, the November election, which we thought, okay, well, that's the end of that. We don't have to worry about that one because we already did the hard part, the primary, because we are a very strong Republican area. So anyway, but yes, we were totally exhausted. And then we had agreed to take a foreign exchange student through Young Life's exchange program. And she came in August of 2012 and was staying with us for 9 months. And again, like that was a crazy thing where, you know, you're weak and you don't know how you're going to deal with this. And she came over and was challenging and belligerent and challenged every rule in the book. And my girls were very much rule followers. So this was like a total, like, I don't know what I'm doing here, Lord. I don't know the people she's hanging out with. I don't know how to do this. But God had a plan. In the end, she accepted Christ before she left and went back home again. And she totally changed her behaviors and her way of living. You know, she came saying, I know there's a God. I don't want him. I don't need him. And I don't want to live by his rules. And she left and totally started living her life by God's rules and being a whole different person. And her parents saw it and they were like amazed. And they didn't think she was even going to get accepted into the program to begin with.
Wow. Well, what a roller coaster ride. And yeah. I'm sure that your faith was really important and sustained you during that time. And Kim, I think it's just important to point out that, you know, you and I right now even are just sitting across the table from each other. And so often, I think, with our political elected leaders, we forget that they are real people with real families and real emotions, and they are our neighbors. And we may disagree on some things. You know, you may not agree with everything that your elected legislator says or does, but they are real people. And as people of faith, we are called to be kind, and we need to pray for our elected leaders. So this is just your PSA to pray for your legislators, because they are making really important decisions that are impacting your everyday life, and we are called to do that. Well, listen, when we come back, we are going to dive into this trust-based relational intervention, TBRI. You don't want to miss it. It may be life-changing for you. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. The life of the Apostle Paul is a riches-to-rags story, the very opposite of most inspirational stories, but Paul saw things differently. He knew he had traded up, not down, and he knew to trust God, even when it wasn't clear where his next meal would come from. In Romans 8, Paul gives us a reason to also trust in God in our times of want. Verse 32, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? We can trust him, even for the little things, and that's because he's already met us in our greatest need of all. He has given us a Savior. Grow in your walk with Jesus with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Spiritual Heritage Tours with AFA President Tim Wildman include a tour of Washington, D.C. and a separate tour of Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown with Stephen McDowell, President of the Providence Foundation.
Now, Williamsburg is very significant in the early history of America. It was the capital of Virginia from like 1700 to the next 80 years, but when the American Revolution broke out, events that affected our history took place there. George Washington was often there as a member of the Virginia legislature. Patrick Henry, the great orator of the American Revolution, was there as well. And so we're going to see some of these early buildings. There's 88 structures that date from colonial times that are still there.
For all the information on tours in June and September, visit the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
And join us on one of our 2024 tours.
Skepticism of God's word seems rampant today, but Dr. Richard Howe says it's nothing new.
I was in college and was encountering skepticism and stuff about the Bible. So that, to me, indicated that, at least in my experience, there was this dearth of grounding people in why we believe what we believe as Christians.
In the curriculum Intro to God's Revelation, Dr. Howe works to overturn the void of understanding the Bible and sharing God's word.
We're looking at how God reveals himself, general revelation, special revelation, what that means, and then the issues of the inspiration of the Bible, its inerrancy, why are certain books in the Bible and not. Then we'll look at how did the Bible come down to us through its transmission through history, and also the issue of translation. And then we'll last look at the concepts of how do we interpret the Bible in order to apply it to ourselves.
The DVD and workbooks for Intro to God's Revelation are available today at resources.afa.net. resources.afa.net.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Conversation with Kim Bonin. She has a degree as an occupational therapist, and we are about to really dive in to something called TBRI. That is trust-based relational intervention. Now, if this is a new concept to you, let me tell you that it was developed by Dr. Karen Purvis and Texas Christian University, TCU. Their College of Science and Engineering actually houses the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development. And there are some laybooks that you can get about this. The most recent one is called The Connected Parent, Real Life Strategies for Building Trust and Attachment. So with that, we're going to dive into what it is, how Kim got involved, and what she is doing now in her community to bring this skill set to families all over the country. So Kim, give us a little tutorial on TBRI. What is it?
Okay, well, first I want to tell you that if you're a layperson and you want to look into TBRI, do the Connected Child book first and then the Connected Parent book. It'll make more sense that way. So TBRI is actually a caregiving model, and it can be applied to all children of all ages and all environments. It was originally designed by Karen Purvis to help kids that they called from hard places. Kids who'd experienced some type of trauma, either they had been adopted or they had had a loss of a parent or something along that line. They might have been a foster care kid. Anyway, but now we know that early risks can include a difficult pregnancy, a difficult birth, early hospitalization. A lot of different things can cause trauma that actually has the cortisone from the mom while she's pregnant will go down onto the baby, and it will disrupt whatever is developing during that time. So they might just end up with like sensory differences, or they might end up with a developmental delay, or they might end up with, something else that doesn't quite develop right. So all of those things can affect child development. So we often see the results as like maladaptive behaviors or broken trust can lead a child, and those make them feel unsafe or make them not understand. They feel out of control or frightened or alone, and they believe that they have to be the ones like controlling their life. I mean, we all think that eventually, right? But as little ones, if you think you have to be the one who's taking care of everything in your life, that's a scary thing for kids. And that can cause a lot of maladaptive habits to develop. And then when a child will come into a family, say they've got adopted out of the orphanage or out of the foster care system, then that family, brings home this wounded child that they are expecting great things from. They're expecting that, this child is going to, we've saved them. They're now going to be great and wondered and so happy. And really the child might push away physically or emotionally. They might rage, they might throw tantrums, they might cause chaos. And there's a lot of disappointment and frustration on the part of the parents. And so parents are looking for something, for help and hope. And we have this beautiful camp that's called Pathway to Hope Family Camp that we do every summer that we've been doing since 2015, I think. And basically we offer real hope and we offer a better way of doing things using TBRI. That can help to heal a child and their family and allow them to emotionally connect, to learn how to identify their feelings. They can learn to use their voice to get their needs met, which, you know, who doesn't want their kid to tell you what they need rather than right. act it out? And we focus a lot on emotionally connecting and playfully correcting. We're retraining them. We're not doing punishment. We want to develop long-term skills for our children and to give them life values. So, for instance, we teach parents about time in versus time out. So a lot of times parents, when they're wanting to discipline their kids, and by the way, traditional discipline does not work well with kids who've experienced trauma, because what it does is this pushes them back into their fight, flight, or fear response, and they go into that, and they then therefore cannot learn because they're upset and they're frightened, and they're basically their brain is not functioning on a thinking level. It's on an emotional roller coaster, and so they can't learn that way. So you have to do things a little bit differently when you have a kid with sensory differences or with different ways of thinking, or they've experienced some type of trauma. So you don't want to push them away. You want to actually pull them in. And so what we're trying to do is we do time in with a kid when they've done something we don't care for, and we've asked them to redo it, which is another thing we can talk about too. If they're not ready to do that, then you ask them to sit right next to you and think about what they did and let you know when they're ready to talk about it. And then you can talk about what they did, why it was incorrect, and what you would like them to do next, what you'd really like them to do next time that situation happens. And so then you sit right there with them so they know you're right there waiting for them. And it might take a long time. Debbie would tell you she's sat hours sometimes with her kids waiting for them to come around, but it's part of what you have to do to really just let that kid know you're there for them and you're the safe person that's in their life now. And so then you take the kid through a physical redo of the whole situation and you ask them to do it the correct way this time. And the reason you do that is because that helps it to form a new pathway in the brain so that next time they come across that situation, they're more likely to remember what you've asked them to do because they've been through it. Now, again, it's going to take many repetitions. Don't think it's not, because it will. But if you are trying to teach trying to develop a new pathway in your brain for behavior or activity, it takes 400 repetitions to get that pathway formed in your brain. However, if you are enjoying things, you're having fun, endorphins are flowing in the brain, it actually only takes like 12 to 14 repetitions to get that pathway formed. So if you have fun while you're correcting your kids and you're allowing them to learn through play and fun, then they're going to learn it a lot faster. So that's a huge thing to think. I mean, who wants to repeat things 400 times?
Not me.
I mean, I'd rather have the 12, right?
Right.
So time in versus time out. If you send them away again, they're going to just kind of go in their own little bubble, and that doesn't help them to learn. We tell the parents they're on a marathon with their kids. This isn't a sprint. We're on a marathon to relearn new skills. You're asking these children to lay down their maladaptive skills and to learn new, more appropriate skills. So it takes time for that to happen. And if the parent doesn't follow through with it, the kid can't follow through with it, really. We remind everyone, each parent and child, they're precious and they're loved. And they can't do anything to change that. It's an unconditional love we're offering them, right? And we're giving them a safe person so they don't have to be the parent. They can have somebody watching over them, keeping them safe, and they need to feel safe, which is another crazy thing, is a thing called felt safety, which is something we work on with parents. So again, your goal in disciplining is not to punish, but it's to correct and to retrain and to guide your child into the wanted behaviors that you want.
I think what you're saying is so important, Kim. I want to go back and recap some of those things and pull out the important points that I think you're making and reinforce them, because when we become parents, we want to do a good job. And we want everybody to know that we're doing a good job. You and I were just talking about that dreaded moment that everyone faces. You know the moment I'm talking about, parents. You have a cart full of groceries, and all of a sudden, your kid has the biggest meltdown that ever melted down in the face of the grocery store. Everyone's looking at you. Everyone's judging you. That's just a terrible moment, because you think, everyone thinks I'm a terrible parent. Because I clearly am. I cannot control my child. There are no snacks. I'm out of snacks. I'm out of iPad shows. Like, this is not good. And then you talked about those parents who face extraordinary challenges because their kids have had some sort of trauma. Now, every kid will experience trauma. Every kid does. But it has a dose-graded effect. And the more trauma you experience with a lack of protective factors, that's when we're talking about impacting your brain and causing what we call toxic stress. And so I think that's important for parents to know. And sometimes that trauma, we can't control. We can't fix those things. If they experience sometimes death or divorce or moving or financial stress, those things are out of our control. And you're also talking to parents who are trying to do something good by fostering, by adopting. And I think there are a lot of parents who have a misconception that if I have a baby, if I adopt a baby or foster a baby, they are young enough that they're not going to have any trauma. And we know that that's actually not true, just from what you were talking about, experiencing cortisol and in utero, you know, being exposed to that.
And I think that can be from a positive or a negative stress. It can be a positive thing during pregnancy. You're excited to move to a new house, but that will come down on the baby as cortisol, even though we're like, we're happy. It's still a stress on your body, and it's a stress on the baby that you have no clue about.
Well, absolutely. And so then that makes us all as parents feel paranoid, like, oh, great. Now we've just ruined our baby's brains for life. Like, we didn't have enough to worry about. But the opposite is also true. And that's the hope of what you're offering right here through what my pastor calls common grace. Like, that's skills that we have professionally that come alongside our faith that are practical things that we can do. So I want to go back and talk about this concept of emotionally connecting and playfully correcting. All I can hear, Kim, when you're saying that is my husband in my ear, on my shoulder, just proverbially saying, see, I told you, because he's always the fun one, right? You know, and I'm the serious, lay down the law. Let's go back and unpack that a little bit, because I think that's a practical skill that any parent with any kid could say, tell me more about that. How do we emotionally connect and playfully correct?
Okay. One big thing that I think you've probably talked about before on your show is the eye contact. Like, you want to make eye contact with your child when you're talking to them and when you're asking them to do something. You want them to also make eye contact with you. Like, it's important. You want them to see that you are there and they need, and that you want to connect with them. So emotional connection happens a lot of times through eye contact. That's a huge part of it. Safe touch is another big part of it. So you're going to, you can do things with a kid. Like, if you're wanting them to come, you're needing to leave the playground. So you can ask your kid, hey, it's time to go. We need to go now. Do you want to walk on my right side or on my left side and hold my hand? Which way would you like to go? You're giving them a choice. You're offering them some sense of power and control, but it's things that you can both accept. Now, it's interesting because I learned this after I had my kids were grown, But, you know, my thing was always, I'll give them two choices, one which they'll like and one which they won't like. So they'll make the one you want them to make, right? Well, in TVRI, we learned that you want to give them two choices and you want both choices to be acceptable to both of you. But what your goal is to keep them moving in the right direction. So you need to go home from the playground. So you're giving them a choice. You also can help them in transitions by giving them, hey, 3 minutes and we're going to have to be going. So do whatever you're going to do, you know, last thing on the playground. And then that helps them, you know, might even count down. Okay, 2 minutes. Okay, 1 minute. Okay, 30 seconds. All right, you need to come now. Which way do you want to do this? We're going to walk holding my hand or walk behind me, or do you want a bunny hop behind me, or whatever you want to give them the choice of. But you give them a choice, and that way, you know, they're going to be able to respond in a positive way, and you have connected to them. So say they say, no, I'm not coming, you know, I still want to go do this. Okay, well then you're, hey, are you asking or telling? Because, you know, that's another way. Hey, are you asking or telling? Oh, I'm telling. Okay, well, think you're supposed to be asking, so let's try that again, you know. And so then hopefully they'll just change that around and ask you, and if not, then you come up and you say, okay, we've got two choices, here are your two choices. Number one, you can walk beside me. Number two, you know, you can walk beside me and hold my hand. Those are your choices, which do you want? And then they have to make their choice, and you know, you can get more firm as you go along, but you want to playfully start out, because actually 80 to 85% of the time, if you playfully correct, a kid will go in the direction that you're wanting them to go.
Oh, you just validated my husband's parenting. See, we talked earlier on the show about letting dads be dads. So moms, if you're like me and you want it to all be, you know, so serious and you're trying to get your discipline face on, you heard it right here from Kim that sometimes playfully correcting is really very effective. And I think that tip that you just gave is applicable no matter where you are in parenting. We call it pediatric choices in my nursing world, and it works even if you have a teenager. Say your teenager wants to go to a party that you don't want them to go. Instead of saying, no, you can't go to that. Why would you even ask me if you would go to that? You know, I'm not going to, you know, that we push play on our lecture. If you do that of, you know, the pediatric choice and just say, okay, well, I'm not okay with that, but would you like to invite a friend here? Or would you like me to take you and your friend to dinner? Like, give them something that you would do both of those things. Just giving a kid a little sense of control that they're not just being told, yes, you can do this, or no, you can't do this. It is life-changing. And I'm going to confess, Kim, may or may not have used that in my marriage. You know? Hey, honey, do you want to take me to the movies tonight or out to eat? Like, I'm okay with either one of those.
Exactly.
Well, good listen, choices. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this brain science and how we can implement principles of TBRI, how you can learn more about it, and what that means for your kids at home. We'll talk more about trauma and the impact that it has and the hope that we can find on the other side of it. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Progressive elites in Hollywood, big tech, mainstream media, and higher academia are lying to our next generation. They want to convince our young people that America's biblical foundation is offensive, outdated, and must be overthrown. Your gift today will unleash AFA action to share the timeless truth of why protecting the biblical family is essential to the survival of the American Republic. You'll also get the free DVD and booklet set, Progressive Threat to the American Republic. Visit AFAaction.net.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA aims to evangelize the lost and disciple the believer. AFA aims to strengthen biblical marriages and equip parents to raise godly children.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
There's a culture war raging in America, and like it or not, we're in the battle.
Sandy Rios, AFA's Director of Governmental Affairs and the host of the podcast Sandy Rios 24/7.
For 40-plus years, American Family Association has been fighting for biblical values in America. We've been here to shine the light of Christ into a dark world and to stand against the evil of the day. And by God's grace, we're making a difference. One vital way that you can join forces with us is through a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation. The charitable gift annuity will benefit you and help ensure AFA is in the fight for years to come.
See if a charitable gift annuity is right for you. Call the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. The AFA Foundation, the Financial Stewardship Division of the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. Over the last 19 years, we have traveled the country to love and serve the brokenhearted by helping them rebuild their homes after natural disasters. Today, we're ready and excited to announce 8 Days of Hope 20 is happening March 9th to March 16th in Amory, Mississippi. Last year in March, Amory saw an EF3 tornado come through the town and damage thousands of homes, and there was even loss of life. And now we as the body of Christ get a chance to serve this community again through March 9th through March 16th. You're invited. It's free. We provide food and lodging, and there's something for everyone. Can you bring your family? Yes, you can. During the outreach, we're also going to have a special night of worship with Darren Mulligan from We Are Messengers, Ben Fuller, and Jonathan Traylor at a free concert for the volunteers and the families alike. Please join us. All the information is on our website, 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to my spirited conversation with Kim Bonin. She has a degree in occupational therapy, and she's an expert on trust-based relational intervention. That's TBRI. And we have been talking about how we can improve our parenting. So if you've missed it, let me recap you. Kim's married to a neurosurgeon turned state representative, and she is a mom, and really about a decade ago, came into contact with the book, The Connected Child by Karen Purvis, who was one of the co-founders of Trust-Based Relational Intervention. And we know that kids today face trauma, and some more than others. And we're learning more and more every day about how those trauma experiences impact our brains. So parents, I want you to listen to this because this is really important. A lot of times we see behavior that our kids exhibit as just a choice. We just see it as it's good behavior or it's bad behavior, and kids should just have control over which behavior they choose. And sometimes it's very difficult for them to do that. Sometimes, as Kim has shared with us, they can get stuck in that fight, flight, or fear state, and they can't learn. Their brain is like scrambled eggs in that moment. All of the signals are scrambled and they can't learn. And so she has talked to us about emotionally connecting and playfully correcting. And she gave us a really shocking statistic that says it takes 400 repetitions to create a pathway in your brain. But if you're learning and doing that with fun, it can be as little as 12 to 14. So we talked about pediatric choices, and that is a life hack I promise you I use every single day. It's great, even with adult kids. And Kim, I want to cover a couple more things about TBRI before we talk about your involvement in the community and more about your camp and your ministry through Anchor Point Ministries. Talk to us about words, the words that we use. You told me kids can only take about 10 to 12 words at a time. So I think in most of our lectures, we give way more than that.
Exactly.
Please correct us. Please help us. Please give me some hope here.
So especially when your child is having some type of difficulty, their brain is already kind of on high alert, right? They're already struggling to control their emotions. And so they will only absorb 10 to 12 words. So you have to find ways that you can give them the words that they need. The other thing I wanted to go off on real fast. One thing you were talking about with like behaviors, we think of them as good or bad. There is a need behind every behavior. So if you can try to think of what that need is behind your child's behavior, sometimes it might be that they're dehydrated or that they're hungry. Honestly, the kids that are struggling need food and hydration every 2 hours. They also need sensory input every 2 hours, which is something we kind of haven't gotten onto. But for the 12 words thing, trust-based relational intervention has a lot of what they call kind of key phrases or value terms. And there are short phrases that can help you and your child know like what you need from them. You might say, no hurts. Well, you've talked to them about what that means. It's a physical or emotional hurt, but they understand. So if their behavior is causing harm or hurt to someone, you can be like, hey, sweetie, we don't no hurts. We don't do hurts, you know, and that's just a little reminder that they need to change their behavior. Words like with respect. Again, are you saying it with respect? You know, are you asking, you telling? Like, what are we doing here? Choices. You talked about choices. How many choices can you give your child so that you can say yes to them as many times as possible throughout your day? So that when you do have to say no, you're not going off of an empty tank with the kid, right? You've already filled up their tank with the yeses. So choices, consequences, permission and supervision, cooperate and compromise. Compromise is a huge word, but it is so important in helping to get your needs met. Our very first camp, the whole family comes to camp. You have one child that you think is your quote unquote the target child, but misbehavior affects everybody in the family. We all play our roles. But we had a little, because everybody in the family comes, we had a two-year-old that was in camp. So we're doing like 45-minute sessions that we're learning about these different phrases. And after we had the whole week of camp, we had our post-camp. And at post-camp, the mom came back of the two-year-old. And, you know, you think two-year-old, 45 minutes, that's a long time for them to be listening to anything. And mom came back and said, my two-year-old has become the king of compromise. She's like, he can't say the word. He can say that. Let me have that C thing. But he knew how to work out a compromise. And that's huge, right? It's part of getting your needs met is learning how to make compromises. And maybe you don't get that compromise, but you've tried and you've thought about what could we do to give a little bit each way. So anyways, compromise is great. Listen and obey. Focus and finish. That's a huge phrase that like teachers could really use a lot. Focus and finish. You're just asking them to do these things. You're not giving them a long lecture about why or how or what. You're just focus and finish. Gentle and kind. Accepting no. Who's the boss? That's a good one. Who's the boss?
I think every parent's like, oh yeah, I like that one. I'm going to put that one down.
Exactly. Because the kids need to understand that there is a safe person mm-hmm. that is helping them get their needs met, and they don't have to do it all themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing for kids to learn, especially if they've been in an environment where they did have to be their own parent. Mm-hmm. Sticking together is another huge one that we teach the kids. And sticking together might mean you're listening while someone else is talking. It might mean when you get out of the car, you don't go run off to wherever you're going. You stick with mom and dad. You stay within 3 to 5 feet of them. They should be able to reach out and grab you at any point in time. And the child does not walk in front of you. The child walks beside you or behind you. Again, it's just showing who's in charge. And you can do fun games of like walking, you know, have them stand next to you. Okay, we're going to walk forward 2 steps. Okay, now we're going back 3 and like have them copy you, have them follow you. I mean, that's part of just teaching them who's in charge. Using your words is a huge one. Obviously, having fun. I mean, that's the other thing. Our rules at camp are stick together, no hurts, and have fun. I mean, what's better than that? You could use those rules for all of life, right? And it would be a lot more fun.
And so at camp, you're really teaching families these practical skills, but it doesn't feel like school. It right. feels like camp, and you're doing it in a fun way, but that's what they're doing. They're learning these physical skills, like how do you walk them physically back through a situation where they may have had a misstep. And one other thing I want to ask you about, Kim, is we were talking about nurture versus structure. Now, a lot of people probably hear nurture versus nature, but there is a concept to be considered on nurture versus structure. And I think this is a hot topic in parenting. Like, do we just be very nurturing and gentle parenting is very popular, or no, we're going old school, like it's my way or the highway. How do you balance those concepts in the framework of TBRI?
So in TBRI, we really talk to people about, we want to have it on a balance scale. You want to have nurture or connecting, balanced with structure or correcting. So it really needs to balance out. So think about how you're interacting with your child. Are you always correcting? How about when are you connecting? Like, you need to just kind of think it through during the day. How many times have I done one versus the other? How many times have I encouraged them rather than told them what they're doing wrong? So those are things to think about. And you want to allow your child to experience a sense of safety, a sense of trust, a release of their control, and the capacity to try new behaviors. That's what you're trying to get them to do by allowing this balance of connecting and correcting, or nurture and structure.
And that is really helpful. And that's what you're doing at your camp. So tell us more about your ministry and how you got involved with Anchor Point and how this fits into that ministry that they provide to the community.
So at Anchor Point, we have a whole network of services that we offer for people. It started out as a pregnancy and parenting center. We added in a full medical clinic where they have ultrasounds, STD testing and treatment, and pregnancy tests that are all free. And we have well woman care and prenatal care. So all that got added in. We also have the camp that we've been talking about, which happens in the summer, usually 1 week in the summer, usually the end of July. It is the most, I look forward to that week every summer. It's the most challenging, but the most rewarding week, because we can see these parents and these children make these significant changes and healing. And then they're on their road to a new way of living and living life. And it's just beautiful to see. Because we're moving them in the right direction and we're offering this deep healing. So Anchor Point offers the parenting classes, the prenatal classes. We actually just started a couples Bible study, which is really so awesome. There's client couples that have come back to us. There's 7 couples that are involved in a Bible study right now, and we have free childcare for them. And they're really just getting to learn to love each other and accept each other, and to see the trials that they've been through and how they've drawn them together, right? So I think that's great. We have various recovery ministries. We have a sexual abuse recovery ministry, a child loss recovery, an abortion recovery and healing ministry. And now there's a trauma reboot also. That's another recovery ministry that we have. We have a maternity home that's called the Hope House. It opened we've had 12 residents there, and we've had 12 babies, and those girls will also, they'll be doing some type of education while they're there. They're going to be getting a certificate or a GED or graduating high school or going to college, whatever that is. And we've had really good success with that. We've had several move on to longer term places, or they're reunited with families, but they're all making great strides in a positive direction and moving forward.
And you even shared that one of the families who came to your camp was inspired to start an organization of their own for foster kids. Tell us about that.
Yes. So we had a family several years ago who came to camp. They had 2 adopted children and 2 natural born children. And they came to camp and really believed in the TBRI, found it hugely helpful and instrumental in making a difference in their lives. And the mom came back the next year and was an assistant with our camp. And then she went out and started the Sanctuary, which is an organization for foster families. And it, again, is based all on trust-based relational intervention and helping to teach that to these foster parents or assistants so that they can understand that this is a huge part of what can help make a success story out of these hard situations.
I think that is just absolutely wonderful. And having been to your camp and seen all of the fun that was being had, I know there are going to be parents listening, and you mentioned it, a lot of teachers, I think, who are thinking, this could be really helpful for me in a classroom. So you suggested, if you're a parent and you just want to know more about these developmental principles and these techniques that were developed by Dr. Karen Purvis and her colleague, you can look at the book, The Connected Parent. That's Real Life Strategies for Building Trust and Attachment. And you can get that anywhere books are sold. But if you are a professional, so some of those categories would include therapists or caseworkers or foster care, adoption care specialist, occupational therapist, medical professional, counselor, CASA representatives, or early childhood and developmental specialist, you can look at the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU, Texas Christian University, at their College of Science and Engineering, and see if this is something that's right for you. And, you know, we are almost out of time, but how did you get involved in that? And what was your journey like? And how could that inspire somebody else, Kim?
So I actually met Debbie Simmons, who is the founder of Anchor Point, at another lunch for nonprofit ministries. it was called the Bay. I can't remember now. Anyway, I met her at this lunch and then went back to Anchor Point, did a tour, fell in love with the ministry, was handed the book. And then I started volunteering, and I have taught some of the developmental classes for the parents. I've taught baby massage, which is my favorite ever class to teach. It's so amazing. And I teach about play and about how you are your child's best plaything. They have to develop in relationship. That is part of how God created us. So that's what we need to remember, that you are your child's best plaything and the best learning tool that they have. It's not an iPad. It's not anything else. It's you, mom and dad. It is you.
That is a good word, Kim. It is so true. They want our presence more than they want our presents, like our gifts. Yes. That is what I say all the time. And especially in those teenage years, you can think, no, the last person they want is me. That is not true. Kids are designed. I believe that God puts it in their heart to want their parents. Well, you can find out more about Anchor Point Ministries. You can go to anchorpoint.us and you can find out how they are giving families hope. And I hope that this may inspire you, whether to implement these in your own family or to volunteer and serve in your community, because God can use everyone. Well, we'll see you here next time, where we prescribe hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.